This is Audible.
This audiobook contains the opinions and ideas of its authors. It is intended to provide helpful and informative material on the subjects addressed in the audiobook. It is sold with the understanding that the authors and publisher are not engaged in rendering medical, health, or any other kind of personal professional services in the audiobook. The listener should consult his or her medical, health, or other competent professional before adopting any of the suggestions in this audiobook or drawing inferences from it. The authors and publisher specifically disclaim all responsibility for any liability, loss, or risk, personal or otherwise, which is incurred as a consequence, directly or indirectly, of the use and application of any of the contents in this audiobook. Simon & Schuster Audio presents You Staying Young, The Owner's Manual for Extending Your Warranty by Dr. Michael F. Roizen and Dr. Mehmet C. Oz. Read by the authors.
I'm Dr. Mehmet Oz.
And I'm Mike Roizen.
Most of us think aging happens like this. We go on our way, living happily through life until one day we start to feel old. And the symptoms domino right before our cataract-clouded eyes. Our bones creak, our backs hurt, we space in the names of our neighbors, we hate driving at night, we can't hear what our spouses are saying, and our sex lives pretty much come down to brushing up against the washing machine. Soon, we're eating dinner at 3:30, and our primary goal of the day is staying up long enough to watch Wheel of Fortune.
To us, that approach means you're drowning in life, not bathing in the beauty of it. We're here to challenge that perception of aging and create a new way of thinking about anti-aging medicine. The traditional focus of the medical community has been on treating chronic diseases and reversing acute illnesses associated with aging, cancer, heart disease, and stroke. The assumption was clear. Since heart disease and cancer alone account for over 50% of all deaths, you could live maybe 50% longer if you could avoid these big killers. As it turns out, this isn't what would happen. As devastating as these diseases are, wiping them out as your killers increase your average life expectancy by only about 9.5 years, not the 30 or 40 that you would expect. Why? Because something else takes their place.
To add serious years to your life and life to your years, you have to lower your risk for all diseases. And the only way to do that is to slow your rate of aging on the cellular level. Curing cancer or any other disease does not necessarily do anything to change the nature or speed of your bodily aging process. That's because aging and disease, although they interact with each other, aren't the same thing. As we grow older, all of our systems slowly deteriorate, which makes us more vulnerable to disease. By slowing the aging of our cells while simultaneously preventing disease, we can enjoy not only a higher quality of life, but a much longer one as well. This is where we're taking you. Throughout this audiobook, we'll refer to your real age, a formula designed to figure out your biological age based on your lifestyle and behaviors, rather than your simple calendar age. Do good things, and your real age is much younger than your calendar age. Do bad things, and you can have the body of an oldster even if the calendar tells you that you haven't hit 30 yet. One of the great things that the real age formula has taught us is this: make changes and see the rewards. You can figure out your real age with a free test at, what do you know, www.realage.com.
Your body, your city. Perhaps the best way to explain the dynamics of aging is to look at another complex system that's subjected to the same forces as your body, a city. Some cities remain beautiful and elegant in their old age. Think of old but elegant European cities like London. while others that may not even be old look worn down, beat up, and in need of an urban ICU. Every city experiences the ups and downs of aging. How well the city managers and residents adapt largely determines whether the city will age gracefully or end up on the wrong side of spray paint, riots, and urban decay. Now, every city has its genetic code, just as you have yours. But for a city, genes are geography. Whether it's built on a river, or whether it's located in a hot or cold climate, or whether it lies directly in a prevalent hurricane path. The city's geography can't inherently change, but the city can adapt to that environment with earthquake-proof construction, underground tunnels for walking in wintertime, or ferry system for commuting. The adaptation the city makes to survive and to thrive is what's crucial to its vitality. The same goes for you. Just because you've been dealt a genetic hand that predisposes you to heart disease or diabetes or needing pants as large as a parachute doesn't mean that you can't mitigate the effect of those genes. One of the major things we'll teach you is that while you can't change your genes, you can change whether they are turned on or off, or how you express them. Not every aggressive, detrimental gene needs to be turned on, and not all of your sleepy, protective genes have to remain dormant. Just like a city, you can compensate elegantly if you understand your options. After all, Rome is called the Eternal City. You'll learn many ways to manage your personal metropolis. You'll see that the immune system is your body's police force. Your arteries are like roadways that can be clogged, blocked, or worn down by years of abuse. Your brain is like the energy grid that supplies power to your entire city. It can be knocked out here and there if you let neurologic branches fall on your power lines. Your skin, in many ways, is like a city's parks and green space, contributing the overall sense of beauty and vibrancy. Your fat, yep. It's landfill. You consider yourself the mayor with the power to make all the decisions about what's best for your biologic city. Our goal is to put your body at the top of the 10 best cities to live in list. It's to make it vibrant and hip with lots of resources and good management of those resources. Perhaps most of all, it's to give it the ability to adjust rapidly to changing times, to reinvent itself. Here's how we're going to introduce it to you. Throughout the audiobook, you'll encounter 14 major causes of aging in special sections titled Major Ager. In the chapters between, you'll discover exactly how the major agers affect various parts of your body and find specific, practical suggestions about how you can counteract their effects. Then in sections called U-tips, we'll list a bunch of actions to keep your body working as vibrantly at 60 as it was at 35. In the PDF file that accompanies this audiobook, we've provided a 14-day extended warranty plan for doing the little things every day that make a big difference so that you can live longer and live younger. This plan will serve as the blueprint for your future decades. You'll probably want to print the extended warranty plan file for easy reference.
Indulge us for a moment and answer this question. How healthy are you compared to other people your age? Excellent, very good, good, fair, or bad? If you selected fair or bad, you're 30 times more likely to die in the next 2 years. If that's not enough to scare the Pop-Tart right out of your mouth, then we're not sure what is. But we're not in the business of trying to frighten you. We simply want you to see that you're responsible for making your own most livable city list. You likely have a gut feeling about how well you're living, about how healthy you are, and about your personal weak links. Your innate feelings about your body may lead to the ultimate insight, that you may not be headed in the right direction. Luckily, science is here to help. And given what science has uncovered recently, you're going to be able to make these changes. Before we jump in with explanations about these wondrous biological processes and the specific conditions and aging-related problems you can control, let's explore what, in fact, science has found. These five principles will change the way you think about the way your body ages. Number one, aging is really about trade-offs. A lot of people think that creaky joints, craggly nails, and cranky bowels are simply part of the deal. You get to live to 80-something, but you're going to have your fair share of misery along the rest of the way. Hold on. Yes, there is a trade-off, but it's not that one. If you take a look at every biological process that happens in your body, there's an evolutionary reason why it works that way. And that reason, without fail, is to ensure the survival of the species. That is, evolution has deemed the perpetuation of your genes to be much more important than the perpetuation of your individual life. Your biological processes are designed to protect you only long enough to reproduce and to raise your young. In fact, it wasn't until the mid-20th century that human beings could expect to live much beyond their reproductive years. Those processes that make perfect sense for reproduction may not work in your favor as you get older. That's aging. The systems designed to protect you until you finish reproducing, whether you're actually reproducing is unimportant, can be maladaptive as you age. When you look at aging through the lens of the gene, rather than the lens of the individual, it all makes much more sense. These trade-offs are what we'll occasionally refer to as the unified theory of aging. The fact that aging isn't some master plan for life, but rather an offshoot. Number two, aging isn't about breaking down as much as it is about repair. Stuff breaks. Cars, computers, and relationships all have their own breaking points. And to suggest that stuff will not break either through acute injury, a five-alarm fire or a torn knee ligament, or from wear and tear over time, a 50-year-old roadway or an overused back, would be misleading. While it's obviously important to keep your biological systems from breaking down, the real secret to longevity isn't whether or not you break, it's how well you recover and repair when you do. Our bodies, in fact, were designed with a great efficiency and ability to repair themselves. As with a car, you'll get a lot more mileage out of your body if you perform routine maintenance. Aging is essentially a process in which your cells lose their resilience. They lose their ability to repair damage because the things you might never have heard of until now, like mitochondria and telomeres, aren't working the way they should. But it's within your power to boost that resilience and keep your vehicle going an extra couple 100,000 miles. Number three, aging happens from both the inside out and the outside in. You'll learn in this audiobook that aging is not only about cellular processes, but it's how you respond, adapt to, and deal with the stressors that affect you from the outside. Things like sun and stress and slippery sidewalks. What does that mean? It means that aging is really about the rate of aging. Specifically, how the outside and inside factors accelerate or decelerate your aging. Here's the big secret about aging. Your rate of aging doubles every 8 years. So, if we were able to maintain a 40-year-old's rate of aging for the rest of our lives, we would live past age 120 and die of old age. While inside out and outside in both play a role and both influence each other, your job is to try to manage both forms so that you slow the real culprit in growing old, the rate of aging. Number four, aging is not about individual problems, but compounded ones. Spend any time at a deli counter and you know that Swiss cheese has two different looks, big holes or small holes, all in random order and patterns. A good way to think about aging is to imagine yourself looking through a dozen slices of stacked-up Swiss cheese. If the holes are small and the slices are thick, you can't see through the stack. Now pretend that each of these Swiss cheese slices represents a layer of protection that your body provides to prevent aging. People who are vibrant and strong may have small holes in their system, stuff that lets through a few problems, but nothing too major. As aging takes effect, however, those holes can get a little bigger, or the cheese can get a little thinner. When big holes from one slice perfectly align with big holes from another slice, then, in effect, you've got big problems. That's a little bit what aging is like. The small problems may not have a big effect here and there, but when they grow and when they interact with other problems, then you've created what we like to call, cue scary orchestra music, the web of causality. That's when seemingly small health problems spiral into bigger ones, all possibly triggered by several different causes. Number 5, aging is reversible. All you need is a nudge. What you'll learn in this audiobook is how to nudge your systems so that they work in your favor to create leverage points in life. And the great thing is that it's never too early or too late to start making these changes. You don't need a complete overhaul because, frankly, your body is a pretty fine piece of machinery. What you'll ultimately do is find and fix your own personal weak links, the things that make you most vulnerable to the effects of aging. The cumulative effect of those nudges can be huge when it comes to increasing the length and quality of your life. The truth about aging is that you, right now, have the ability to live 35% longer than expected, with a greater quality of life and without frailty. Restricting calories, increasing your strength, and getting quality sleep are three of nature's best anti-aging medicines. Together, these activities control 70% of how well you age. No matter what kind of life you've already led, aging is reversible. You can have a do-over if you want it. If you perform a good habit for 3 years, the effect on your body is as if you've done it your entire life. Even better, within 3 months of changing a behavior, you can start to measure a difference in your life expectancy. Our goal here is to ensure that you have a high quality of life until whatever time, forgive our bluntness, you drop dead. Nobody wants to spend their golden years on diets of Jell-O, suffering from bed sores, or not remembering the previous 9 decades. You want to live long and live well. You want to feel alive while you're living. You don't want to grow old. You want to stay young. This is the way. Now, hop to it.
Major ager, bad genes and short telomeres, how genetics influences aging, and you control your genes. As we get older, it's easier to pass the blame for our own health problems onto other people. Recently diagnosed with high cholesterol? Ah, 3 grandparents and 2 great uncles all died of heart disease. Accidentally put the ketchup in the freezer the other day? Oh yes, Aunt Matilda had a touch of dementia. Battling a weight problem for most of your life? Yep. Pops and his brothers believed in the 3 food groups of cheese ravioli, meat sauce, and multiple helpings. Many of us buy into a very similar theory of aging. We're born with our health destiny. That is, our genes, the chromosomal alphabet soup that includes ingredients from our parents, their parents, and so on, are primarily responsible for determining whether we get heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, or any of the other diseases or conditions that can turn a grade A quality of life into spoiled ground chuck. But that's simply not the way aging works. Your genes are important, especially when it comes to one of the most powerful age-related problems, memory loss. Your genetic destiny, however, is not inevitable. Think back to the city that we outlined earlier and consider your genes as the physical location of that city. Some characteristics you simply can't change. Chicago is windy. Minneapolis is snowy. San Francisco is built on fault lines. A city's location serves the same function as your body's genes. Your genetic traits make you more or less predisposed to health-related windstorms, snowstorms, and earthquakes. But just as you can modify cities to adjust to natural geography and natural occurrences, you can also protect yourself from abnormalities in your genes if you're unhappy with how you've been genetically programmed. When it comes to your body, here's what we know, primarily through studies of identical twins. Your longevity is based 1/4 on your genetics and 3/4 on your behaviors and lifestyle choices. It's not about what genes you have, but how you express them. Genes work by manufacturing proteins, but whether or not a specific gene is turned on or off is largely under your control. Think of the ability to manipulate your genes as developing a set of city-building codes to adapt to the circumstances you're in. It would be like a coastal town requiring houses to be built on stilts to protect against surging tides, or office buildings in San Francisco using earthquake-resistant materials to better protect against an architectural crumble. You adapt and adjust to deal with whatever nature throws your way. That's the way your body works. As the mayor of your physiologic city, you can create different codes to mitigate the effect of the genes you've been dealt. For example, exercise isn't good for you just because it helps burn fat and assists with bikini satisfaction. But it can also alter the expression of your genetic codes to decrease your risk of getting cancer. That means you do have some control over how your genes manifest themselves in your body and how they control the rate and way that you age. Which of your genes is turned on? So how do you change the function of your genes? One way is through the rebuilding of chromosomes. Your chromosomes have small substances on the end called telomeres. Think of them as being like those little plastic tips on the end of your shoelaces, which are called aglets, in case you want to show off in your next Scrabble competition. Every time a cell reproduces, that telomere gets a little shorter, just as the shoelace tip wears off with time. Once the protective covering on the tip is gone, your DNA and shoelace begin to fray and are much harder to use. That's what causes cells to stop dividing and growing and replenish your body. The cell realizes that it's no longer helping the body and commits suicide, which can contribute to age-related conditions. But your body also has a protein called telomerase that automatically replenishes and rebuilds the end of the chromosomes to keep cells healthy. However, lots of cells in your body don't have telomerase, meaning that many of them have a reproduction limit, thus putting a cap on how well your systems can be replenished. The amount of telomerase depends on your genetics, but we're now starting to see that we can influence the size of those little tips, the telomeres. For example, researchers found that mothers with chronically ill children have shortened telomeres, indicating that chronic stress can have a huge influence on how cells divide or fail to. The implication is that if you can reduce the effects that stress has on you through such techniques as meditation, you can increase your chance of rebuilding the telomeres and decrease the odds of having your cells die and contribute to age-related problems. As we start to unlock the ways that we in modern medicine could dramatically manipulate our genes, we're going to start seeing how we can make our genes work for us, not against us. Perhaps the best example of how genes affect us is our memory, which is goal one, in part so you can remember the rest.
Chapter 1. Develop a memorable memory. Our brains sure do have a way of messing with our minds. One moment, you can be spitting out the names of your entire third grade class, the batting statistics from the 1974 St. Louis Cardinals, or the entire script from your favorite Seinfeld episode.
The next minute, you space in the name of your cat. Call them what you want, senior moments, doomsday to dementia, but the truth is that we all experience these neurological hiccups as we age. Some of us write them off to stress, fatigue, or some kind of neurological overload that's caused by the ogre who signs our paychecks, while others worry about whether a moment of forgetfulness means that we have a first-class ticket on the express train to Alzheimer's. No matter what we may think causes our decline in mental acuity, most people share a pretty big assumption about our gray matter, that our genes, the very first major ager, completely control our neurological destiny. That simply isn't true. While many diseases and conditions have genetic elements to them, memory conditions have some of the strongest genetic indicators. For example, a PET scan, which records images of the brain as it functions, reveals evidence of early Alzheimer's when it identifies that the brain is misusing energy. This abnormality is caused by illness of the mitochondria, which is genetically determined. But the truth is that even if your genes have decided to give you a life of serious forgetfulness, you do have the ability to control those genes so your mind is strong, your brain functions at full power, and you remember everything from the crucial details of your life to whether or not you turned off the oven, even when your birthday candles hit triple digits. Plus, we have lots of data from twin studies saying that less than 50% of memory is inherited, meaning that if you get a head start on the action steps we're going to cover, you can alter how your genes are expressed. Genetics loads the gun, but your lifestyle pulls the trigger. Clearly, the brain is the most complex organ in your body. Think of your brain as the city's electrical grid. Your brain's nerve cells, or neurons, are constantly firing and receiving messages in much the same way that power plants send signals and homes and businesses receive them. Power may originate from a main source, but the connections then branch out in every which way throughout the city. Your brain functions the same way. Messages are sent from one neuron to another across your neurological grid. When those neurons successfully communicate with one another through the sending and receiving of neurological impulses, your brain can file away your memories. But what happens when a storm, an accident, or a chainsaw-wielding hoodlum knocks out the power lines? You lose connections, so you lose power. Maybe to a particular neighborhood, or maybe to a large segment of the city, depending on which ones got fried. Same goes for your brain. If something knocks out those neurological connections, then small or large parts of your brain can experience a blackout. And you freak because you can't remember that you left the car keys on the back of the toilet. Certainly many things can cause malfunctions in your neurological grid. Some are acute and immediate, like a concussion arising from a brain bruise. Others are more chronic, as in the case of a genetic malfunction, they can cause your power lines to be rickety, so they easily fritz out. These are the ones that we're mainly going to address here. Your memory. Don't forget about it. Part of our job as doctors is to tell you things straight up, because when we don't tell the truth, people get hurt. No BS. That really stands for no bad science. The research shows that eventually everyone in America will either get Alzheimer's or care for someone who has it. In some way or another, we're all going to be affected by serious change-your-life memory problems. But memory disorders aren't as uncontrollable as they seem, and the way to attack potential brain problems is by using your brain to understand them. Here are some things you should know about your noggin. First, memory loss starts at age 16 and is relatively common by 40. One way you can see this is through research done on video game players. People start losing their hand-eye coordination and the ability to perform exceptionally well in video games after the age of 25. The fascinating part of this research isn't that you'll rarely beat your kid in Mario Kart Double Dash. It's that even if your brain knows what it's supposed to do when presented with an animated hairpin turn at 135 miles per hour, your brain can't fire those messages fast enough to your trigger-happy thumbs. There's a natural slowing of the connection, the power line between your brain and your body. Next, men and women not only differ when it comes to movie tastes and erogenous zones, but also when it comes to mental decline. Men usually lose their ability to solve complex problems as they age, while women often lose their ability to process information quickly. That split shows us a couple of things. One, that there's certainly a strong genetic component to memory loss. And two, that there are specific actions you should be taking to combat that genetic disposition. While there are some places where you're naturally going to decline because of your sex, there are other areas where you're going to have an advantage. That means your job isn't only to try to rebuild the area that's breaking down, but to preserve the areas that excel. But across the board, both genders lose competency in the areas in which they are weak to begin with. So women lose spatial cognition, and men suffer verbal losses. Though it's certainly not true for everyone, it may give you clues as to what areas of your brain to concentrate on as you age. Or it may help you play to your strengths. And finally, you don't have to have an elite brain to know that your 3-pound organ has more power than a rocket booster. It controls everything from your emotions to your decision-making. But when we discuss memory loss, we're essentially focusing on 3 specific brain functions. Sensory information, that is, your ability to determine what information is important. Short-term memory loss, quick, what's the name of this chapter? And long-term memory loss. To really control your own genetic destiny, you need to take a look at what memory loss looks like on the inside. For the record, age-related memory loss is classified in several ways. Conditions such as Alzheimer's, dementia, and mild cognitive impairment are all technically different. For our purposes, we're tackling them all together as age-related memory problems because of the similarities in how they change people's lives. Your brain, mind, and matter. Let's quickly look at what memory really is. Essentially, it's the process of learning information, storing it, and then having the ability to recall it when you need it, whether to solve problems, tell stories, or save yourself on the witness stand. Learning begins with those power connections in your brain, neurons firing messages to one another. Your ability to process information is determined by the junctions between those neurons, called synapses. The ability of brain cells to speak to one another is strengthened or weakened as you use them. We'll spare you all the biological miracles that take place between your ears, but essentially, the more you use those synapses, the stronger they get and the more they proliferate. Problems arise when synapses lie dormant. The less you use certain connections, the greater chance they have of falling into disrepair, like losing fluency in a foreign language if you don't use it for a long time. Technically, we actually learn by weakening underutilized synapses and repairing and strengthening the synapses we commonly use. So, if you cook a lot and you enjoy it, you'll eventually know the recipes by heart and learn them faster because it's enjoyable. You build a large connecting wire which allows for the faster flow of information. By contrast, lesser used pathways fall into disrepair, so you lose or disable those connections. If you haven't exercised your 1970s TV trivia synapse in a long time, then you're not going to remember the name of the kid who played Bobby Brady in the Brady Bunch. 10 points if you said Mike Lookinland before we did. To keep your memory functioning at optimal power, you'll need to focus on 3 aspects of your biology. 1. Your brain. Your brain has 100 billion nerve cells, and each cell receives 100 messages per second. In the time it takes for you to listen to this sentence, your brain cells have been doing more processing than the IRS's computer server. Your neurons, the cells that transmit information, look like mops with shaggy strings that reach out to one another, while the handles of the mops act like the cables that carry the information. These neurons talk with one another with the frequency of 8th-grade girls at a slumber party. The hippocampus, which is shaped a little like a seahorse and is buried deep inside your brain, is the main driver of memory. Your hippocampus processes information before it's stored. It works best when you're either emotionally interested in the material or alert when you're learning about it. That's one reason why coffee may aid memory. It seems to increase your alertness the first time you learn something, which increases the chance you'll deposit it in your long-term memory bank. So flip on your hippocampus or grab a cup of coffee and remember this. There are protein fragments in your brain that sound like the name of a Star Wars droid, beta amyloid. And they're responsible for gunking up your power lines like fallen branches. They're likely responsible for causing Alzheimer's. The primary defect in Alzheimer's affects the input and output power lines of the hippocampus. Memory starts to fade. Now, a down branch here and there won't do much to disrupt the flow of energy through your entire city. But what happens when a lot of branches or shrubs or trees fall on the same part of the grid? You're out of commission. In general, genes control how much beta amyloid you have. But your genes don't have complete control. You can alter the amount of gunk you have gooping up your power lines by altering the expression of one of your genes, the ApoE gene to be exact. ApoE protein acts like the power company crew that removes the branches and sap from the power lines after the storm. It sweeps through and removes the beta amyloid so that you don't lose the ability to remember how many career touchdown passes Dan Marino threw, 420, or what year Diane Keaton won an Oscar for Best Actress, 1977. Whenever we create new synapses to help our brain improve itself, some of this beta amyloid remains behind, and the ApoE workers clear the gunk to ensure a clean connection. One group in the union, however, local ApoE4, sabotages the effort to restore power and even gunks up the power lines further. Research shows that an elevated level of the E4 protein is correlated with a higher incidence of Alzheimer's. Fortunately, there are things you can do to turn down the activity of the E4 gene. Eating turmeric, which is found in Indian foods, seems to reduce expression of E4 gene. India, by the way, has a relatively low incidence of Alzheimer's. Exercise has a similar effect. 2. Your blood supply. A lack of healthy blood flow to the brain is one of the other main causes of forgetfulness. Each side of the brain has a separate blood supply that looks like several large trees during winter. Between the twigs at the tips of the major branches are areas of the brain that are dependent on blood from each of the surrounding trees. The area farthest from two blood supply lines is the watershed area, where we tend to have mini-strokes when the branches of surrounding trees are pruned by atherosclerosis or the tree trunks themselves wither from poor maintenance. Cholesterol-lowering statin drugs may help maintain memory by preserving tree architecture, while also reducing inflammation that ages the brain cells directly. And 3, your neurochemicals. Nerve cells communicate with one another via neurotransmitters, chemicals that ferry information from neuron to neuron across the synapses between them. The most common neurotransmitter is called acetylcholine. When levels of this chemical fall, especially in the hippocampus, we develop cognitive impairment. Many of the treatments for Alzheimer's are aimed at increasing the amount of acetylcholine in the brain. The other chemical that plays a significant role in memory is called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, which works like miracle grow for your brain. During infancy, BDNF helps develop nerves that help us learn. But as we get older, things like inflammation and stress can decrease its levels. Research shows that you can do things to improve your levels of BDNF, such as consuming the spice curcumin, restricting calories, doing exercise, being in love, and taking some of a class of antidepressants known as selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs. Not surprisingly, you can decrease BDNF by eating high levels of saturated fats and refined sugars, as well as by not getting enough of the natural antidepressant tryptophan in your diet. By the way, sure it's found in turkey, but there's twice as much in spinach. So what's the biological effect of all this? Well, if you have serious memory-related problems, the gray matter in your brain actually shrivels faster than a centenarian sunbather. And the connections that are so important to maintaining memory get blocked and broken and detoured so that your memory function is slowed or sometimes lost. In the end, That can cause you to lose the power lines that go to the neighborhood of fashion trivia, or to the office complex of phone numbers, or to the cul-de-sac of your anniversary date. Luckily, there are several simple ways to restore those power lines, regrow those neural connections, and preserve one of the most powerful things you can pass along to the generations that follow, your memory and your wisdom.
U-tips. All your brain wants is this, attention. Feed it, challenge it, care for it, and you'll smack a bad genetic destiny square in the face. One of the key things to do is constantly stretch your mind, be it through crosswords, Scrabble, chess, or learning how to speak Chinese if you don't already. Thankfully, there are many ways to keep your brain operating at maximum efficiency, maximum power, and maximum quality. U-tips teach a lesson. Teaching can save your brain. You're far more likely to retain information if you have to explain it to somebody else. The degree to which you can effectively explain information indicates how well you've actually learned it. The lesson: take advantage of mentoring opportunities, whether it's instructing a class in your favorite hobby at a community college, or inviting the neighborhood teens over to teach them how to change a tire or make a souffle. Teach the next generation, and you'll power up your own generator. U-tip, and be a lifelong learner. Take a look at a massive study done on a population of more than 3,000 nuns. Researchers measured the daily mental and physical activities of living nuns and autopsied those who died during the study. They found that 37% of the nuns who died had confirmed Alzheimer's disease, at least according to what was happening pathologically in their brains. The nuns who fared the best were the ones who were better educated. The nuns with Alzheimer's were, as young adults, less mentally and physically active outside their jobs than those without the disease. That's important because Alzheimer's disease takes decades to develop. The amazing part was that even if the nuns showed pathologic signs of Alzheimer's, they had no clinical symptoms. The point: although these neurologic tangles may be genetic, your ability to resist the effect of them is not. When you increase your learning during your life, you decrease the risk of developing memory-related problems. That means your brain has a fighting chance if you keep it active and engaged, if you keep challenging it with new lessons, if you learn a new game or new hobby or new vocation. You have to challenge your mind, even making it a little uncomfortable by pushing yourself to learn tasks that may not come naturally. Doing tough tasks reinforces the neural connections that are important to preserving memory. Like a clutch athlete, your mind has a way of rising to the occasion. Challenge it, and it will reward you. U-tip, see if your genes fit. If you have a family history of memory-related problems and are comfortable with genetic testing, you can have your level of APOE4 protein checked. That will help you determine whether you're more or less predisposed to clearing that gunky beta amyloid from your neural wiring. You can find out more about the test on www.aruplab.com or athenadiagnostics.com or realage.com. No matter what your result, know that obesity and alcohol intake increase the expression of the gene, while exercise decreases the amount of APOE4 that you activate. U-tip, live in the moment. We all know what life is like when the dog's barking, the phone's ringing, the baby's crying, Nickelodeon is on high volume, and your spouse is trying to explain, by goodness, why the toilet seat wound up in the up position again. And you're worried about what you need to do tomorrow and haven't done today. When it comes to your brain, stress acts like a massive amount of noise in your system, only it comes in the form of nagging tasks, job dissatisfaction, bills, and fights about who's going to which family's house for the holidays. Oi. One of the keys to having a healthy mind is to live as much as you can in the moment. That is, thinking about what you're doing right now, not worrying about the mistakes you made yesterday or the headaches that await you tomorrow. That actually helps reduce the noise in the system. Evolutionarily, you can see how it works. When you're aroused by stress, saber-tooth bearing down fast, you have a very narrow functioning cognitive ability. Run, fight, or die. Good for survival, sure, but that acute function actually shortens the telomeres on your chromosomes. Remember the first major ager? And contributes to memory problems. In the modern age, more stress means the inability to concentrate, and that's been shown to contribute to a shrinking of your prefrontal cortex. Is living in the moment hard to do? Of course it can be, but it's a behavior you can learn with practice, similar to our previous strategy of thinking about thinking. Example, when you're playing with the kids and letting tomorrow's workday weigh on you, force yourself to concentrate on Candyland, making it a great experience for your kids rather than a distant one for you. It takes some time and effort, but in the end, the act of living in the moment rewards not only you, but the people around you. U-tip, feed on brain food. While physics would dictate that your food travels down after you eat it, a certain amount travels up to your brain via arteries after it's been through the digestive process, of course. Among the best nutrients to keep your cerebral power lines strong are omega-3 fatty acids, the kinds of fat found in fish like salmon and mahi-mahi. These healthy fats not only help keep your arteries clear, but improve the function of your message-sending neurotransmitters. Aim for 13 ounces of fish a week, or if you prefer supplements, take 2 grams of fish oil a day, or 600 milligrams of DHA. U-tip, load up on salad. The veggies, not the fat-laden dressing. It's been shown that vegetables, any kind, any place, slow cognitive decline even more than fruits. Eating 2 or more servings a day decreases the decline in thinking by 35% over 6 years. Pass the sprouts, please. U-tip, add a dash of this and that. Several substances have been shown to help cognitive function. These are the ones we recommend and use ourselves. Carotenoids and flavonoids, which are vitamin-like substances that can act as antioxidants. Not essential for life, they tend to give color to fruits and vegetables. Lycopene and quercetin. Good sources include tomatoes, pink grapefruit, watermelon, leafy green vegetables, red apples, onions, cranberries, and blueberries. Resveratrol, found in red wine. Although the high doses that have been researched might require too much alcohol, like 180 bottles a day. So also consider a high-dose purified product as a supplement. A variety of flavonoids found in dark chocolate made with at least 70% cocoa. Just don't overdo it, because chocolate is high in calories. Turmeric and curcumin. Spices found in Indian and curried foods. Mustard also contains turmeric and can reduce ApoE4 activation. U-tip, go with the flow. Your blood feeds your brain nutrients. No nutrients, no brain. No brain, no Super Bowl party this year. So one of your big goals should be to keep your arteries clear and flowing. Reducing high blood pressure to normal improves cognitive function and slows Alzheimer's progression substantially. If you have a diastolic pressure of over 90, that's the bottom number, then you have 5 times greater risk of getting dementia 2 decades down the line than if it's below 90. If you have elevated blood pressure, it may be because your arteries are constricted, often as a result of cholesterol plaques, and limits the amount of blood and nutrients that reach a particular area. In the case of the brain, not having sufficient blood supplied to that watershed area between the 2 main arteries is what elevates the risk of stroke. We'll offer tips for reducing blood pressure and cholesterol plaques in the next chapter. UTIP, get in the game! It's no surprise that exercise is good for your heart as well as for your modeling career, but it's also an elixir for your mind. It seems the more intense exercise preserves neurocognitive function by decreasing the expression of the APOE4 gene to help clear the beta amyloid plaques that gunks up your power lines. Exercise has also been correlated with increased telomere length. Our suggestion for a brain-boosting workout: once or twice a week, choose an exercise that requires not only your body to work, but also your mind, such as Bikram yoga or a game of singles tennis. The sports or exercises that engage you in the moment can really help clear your mind at the same time. You don't need to overdo it. Just 30 minutes of walking a day will help you burn the 2,000 to 3,500 calories a week, the amount shown to increase telomere length. UTIP, learn to tell a joke. There's lots of evidence that a good laugh can help improve your immune system, and humor can also have a valuable effect on your memory. Humor requires what the laugh doctors call conceptual blending. That is, the ability to relate the unexpected to the expected. We laugh when something surprising happens. Having a sense of humor is a sign of intelligence. Telling a joke, like being a teacher, is another way to challenge your brain. You have to be able to play mental hopscotch from one word to another to make sure that the story, joke, riddle, or pun combines a set of expected circumstances and unexpected ones. In other words, what happens once the guy walks into the bar? And ultimately, if you tell it right, you have to have a fair amount of social intelligence as well. The ability to maximize the tension and mystery of the joke until the very last second.
Major ager. Oxidation and inefficient mitochondria. Keep the energy factories of your body running smoothly. We know that you remember mitochondria from 10th grade biology, but we don't expect that you remember all that much about what mitochondria do and why they're important. Think back before iTunes, even before 8-tracks, and well before our ancestors made music by banging rocks. That's the time when mitochondria used to be independent single-celled organisms, essentially parasites that lived symbiotically with their host. But at some point in our evolution, they were swallowed up by our regular cells, thus becoming a part of every cell rather than existing on their own. Mitochondria convert nutrients from food you eat into energy that your body uses in order to perform all the functions it needs. They are the fundamental drivers of metabolism. They make sure that what you eat fits into how you perform. Plus, their function and dysfunction also serves as the backbone for one of the major theories of aging. The problem is, when mitochondria turn your food into energy, they produce oxygen-free radicals, molecules that cause dangerous inflammation in the mitochondria themselves, as well as in the rest of the cell when they spill over. Think of them as the power plants of our bodily city. Just like an old factory, aging mitochondria spill more industrial waste into the environment.
the damage this inflammation causes to your cells and to the mitochondria within your cells is responsible for many aging-related problems. This oxidation, for example, is what causes a rusting of your arteries, which is what ages your cardiovascular system. So let's take a closer look at how mitochondria work. Mighty Mito, the body's power plant. If you look at mitochondria from an aerial view, you'll see something a bit like a labyrinth or a maze. Their jagged little edges are called cristae. You have hundreds of mitochondria per cell and dozens of strands of mitochondrial DNA per mitochondria. That means that every cell contains thousands of strands of mitochondrial DNA. Now think about your bodily city and picture these mitochondria as your body's nuclear power plants. They give off a lot of energy, but also have the potential to cause a lot of damage. If something bombs your power plant, it's not just the physical plant that suffers damage. A whole lot of collateral damage takes place as well. In the case of the power plant, it's radiation that seeps into surrounding neighborhoods and towns. In the case of mitochondria, it's those inflammation-causing oxygen-free radicals, which also decrease the ability of your mitochondrial DNA to convert energy. Both forms of damage spin in a cycle of destruction to your body's cells. Inefficiencies in mitochondrial function cause increased production of free radicals. Well, guess what? More free radicals cause more damage to the mitochondrial DNA, which makes them more inefficient, and so on. Maybe you're thinking, so what? So what if my mitochondrial DNA is a little slow on the old energy conversion process? What's that mean for me? Think about it. If your body can't produce energy efficiently, it means that mitochondria are not getting the most energy out of the oxygen and sugar that their furnaces are fed. So even if you have good nutrition in what you eat, lower levels of your body's energy currency, called ATP, that stands for adenosine triphosphate, are made. We know that mitochondrial damage in the heart happens when your body no longer consumes oxygen and glucose efficiently. We also see mitochondrial damage in brain-related disease and in diabetes, where it influences the pancreas' ability to make insulin. In fact, mitochondrial damage may serve as a contributing factor to certain types of cancer, because the more oxidative damage that takes place, the more DNA is damaged, and that damaged DNA, when it's replicated over and over again, can evolve into a cancer. Damage control. Like a politician who gets bad press, your body can also perform damage control. Over time, those furnaces in your mitochondria, called the cristae, swell and become lazy fat cats. They don't do a whole lot of work. At the same time, young, small, but efficient mitochondria that are continually born become the energy workhorses of your body. In a city model, the big cristae mitochondria would be the high-salaried bureaucrats who spend all day preventing city government from being reinvigorated by young whippersnappers who could replace them, cut through red tape, and do a lot of work for a lower price. In your body, the turf battle happens because the large ones, which are the bad ones, have the power to survive at the expense of the little ones, which are the good ones. It turns out that you can tolerate a lot of damage to your mitochondria because mitochondrial DNA is resilient. This special Marine Corps brand of DNA is used to dealing with the damage that happens when you bombard them with oxidative substances. Eventually, they blow a gasket, and that's when the real damage begins. This all happens as a natural part of the aging process. In fact, people older than 60 have a 40% lower mitochondrial efficiency than people younger than 40. But remember, what's natural is not necessarily inevitable. As you'll see in our next chapter on the muscle that uses the most energy, see if you can guess what that is. That means this. While these seemingly uncontrollable cellular battles may be taking place deep inside your body, you still have the power of an anatomical puppeteer to control the ways that your cells function. But when the system starts to spew toxic waste and you can't keep up with the oxidation in your cells, your arteries begin to rust, which puts heat on quite a few organs, including the heart.
Chapter 2. Take the heat off your heart. When we think about aging-related heart disease, we have to go beyond the basic assumptions that either we're born with bad genes that destine us for cardiac troubles, or we create our own by gunking up our arteries with 45 years of holiday cheese balls. The damage that we do our hearts is caused not solely by genes or cheese balls, but also by the double whammy, major ager of mitochondrial-induced oxidation and inflammation that happens within your arteries. Inflame shame, your heart and arteries. If you were to sneak a peek inside a chest, here's what you'd see. A twisting muscle that looks like the coiled back of a boa constrictor. That's your heart. Not only does its twisting motion keep you alive, but it's also the mechanism through which your body gets the nutrients it needs. Here's how the process works. The heart muscle is stimulated by pacemaker cells to eject blood through the aortic valve. It doesn't push out blood like a balloon emptying air, but like a towel being wrung out of water. That blood pulsates into the aorta, the body's largest artery, which delivers oxygen-rich blood to the rest of the body as well as to your coronary arteries surrounding your heart. Much of heart disease happens in your arteries, the tunnels that feed both nutrients and toxins to all your organs, rather than in your heart muscle itself. Made of three layers, your arteries serve as the site of the inflammatory process that's responsible for many kinds of heart disease. How? Well, it all starts with a nick in your artery and cholesterol. Cholesterol, as you know, comes in healthy HDL, or high-density lipoproteins, and lousy LDL, or low-density lipoproteins form. The smooth inside layer of your arteries is pummeled by a variety of things: high blood pressure, cigarette smoke, excess sugar. When that happens, your body sends lousy LDL cholesterol, I remember it by its first initial L, to those damaged areas in an attempt to heal the wounds. Your immune cells in the damaged area swallow up the LDL cholesterol and burrow into the inner layers of your arteries. Your body then reacts to the wounds and the cholesterol with low-grade inflammation. Makes sense. Inflammation is how your immune system deals with many problems, like splinters, unwanted bacteria, insect venom, or other foreign invaders. Meanwhile, as part of your homeland security team, your healthy HDL cholesterol works to clear that LDL cholesterol out of the area. Think of your LDL as a bus carrying loads of hooligans and dropping them off in your arteries to do damage to them, while your HDL serves as a high-speed paddy wagon that zips through your arteries to get the rogue elements off the streets. HDL is mostly made in the intestines and looks like a plastic baggie that wraps cholesterol so that it can be more easily excreted. Like TVs, toy trucks, and lingerie, cholesterol comes in different sizes, but the most dangerous kind is the smaller kind. The smaller the particle, the more likely it is to nestle itself into your arterial wall, cause damage, and trigger the inflammatory process. To clear the arteries, we need to increase the function as well as the size of the healthy HDL cholesterol. Help can come in the form of niacin, omega-3 fatty acids, and vitamin B5, as well as some new generation statin drugs. Meanwhile, the low-grade inflammation occurring in response to LDL cholesterol, which combined with inefficient mitochondria causes the major age of oxidation, sounds the alarm that summons your body's reinforcement immune cells called macrophages. These macrophages eat the LDL cholesterol, becoming engorged with fat and blowing up like marshmallows.